Oak session number 12433, reel 1.
Mr. Holbrow, reel 1. You were telling me that you were born in Wimbledon.
Yeah.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a civil engineer.
And were you educated in Wimbledon?
Up until I was 5, at a little church school in Range Park.
But then where did you continue the education?
We moved to Birmingham, and in 1924. And first of all, I went to a private school until I was 10 or 11. Then I passed the entrance exam into King Edward's Grammar School, 5 ways, Birmingham, and I stayed there until I was 15 or 16, when we moved to Slough for my father's work, just before I took my matric, unfortunately. But, I got a place straight away at Slough Secondary School, which later became a grammar school, but it was a secondary school in those days. It was called that, and I took my school certificate there, the Oxford school certificate, passed quite well, and then I went into the sixth for a year and sixth form, and then I started with ICI at Slough, the paint people.
In what capacity?
Oh, only clerical, junior clerk, 15 shillings a week.
Where were you and what were you doing when war was declared?
Well, after I'd been there for a year or so, my father, he had previously worked, he'd left the municipal side of engineering, council side, and he had joined private public works contractors. And then subsequently, he started on his own at Slough, and he was doing quite well, but he needed more staff he could trust, and he pleaded with me to join him. I wasn't the least bit interested in civil engineering and road work at that time, but I agreed to, and I worked with him for about 3 or 4 years, learning civil engineering and estimating and all that in his company at Slough. And we did some most interesting jobs all over Berkshire and Wiltshire and so on. It was I got quite interested in it in the end. And then the war came along when I was 21, that's right.
How did you react when you heard the declaration of Chamberlain that we were at war with Germany?
I was quite glad, really, except that I'd just done my first full-time army training on a territorial camp at Bulford on Salisbury Plain, and in August 1939, and whilst I'd enjoyed it, it was lovely weather and it was hard work. We were digging trenches and doing all sorts of RE training and explosives work and marching and night training, bivouacking and so on. And I was glad when the fortnight was over. You know, it was quite a change to civilian life, and of course I sort of hadn't been back from camp a week or a fortnight, and there was a declaration of war, and I was back in uniform again. But from a political point of view, I was quite glad, because I'd turned very anti Hitler and so on, you know, and I felt I had to do my bit. At one time, I mean, I didn't want to be to get involved in anything like that. But as things deteriorated politically and so on, first of all with Mussolini and then Hitler, I gradually changed my views and became quite nationalistic and patriotic, you know, and couldn't wait to get involved.
What in particular had given you that attitude towards the regime in Germany?
Well, the awful speeches of Hitler and so on, and we could see what he was doing to the Jews, or intended to do to the Jews. We didn't realise it was as bad as it was, but we heard all about Kristallnacht and you know, when the pogroms really started and we saw the way Hitler carried on at the Olympic Games and so on, and he was obviously a liar, I mean, and so on. He was somewhat like Saddam Hussein. He would start with Czechoslovakia first of all, and so on, start threatening them over the German minority, which he said was being persecuted, which was a load of rubbish. And then he promised to do nothing, he promised not to march in, and then he did. And so on, and then it went on to with Chamberlain and so on at Munich and that, and he obviously, you couldn't trust anything he said. He was just intended to go on regardless, and when he marched into to Austria and so on, the Anschluss and so on, it became obvious that nothing was going to stop him, and we had to make a stand somewhere. And of course, then he started threatening Poland and so on. So that was really what convinced me he was a thoroughly bad lot.
So you thought he'd be a threat to your own way of life?
Yes, I thought he'd be a threat to, not so much to us, because he would like to have done a deal with. He envied our empire. He had no empire. He would like to have split the world, I think, between him and us, you see. But no, he was more going for the weaker people and so on. And France, of course, he didn't like. And from that angle, we didn't have to we didn't have to go to war, really. But I think we realised what a danger he was, and we had a conscience, really. We should never have let him get so strong after all the sacrifices of the First World War.
When had you actually joined the TA?
I joined the TA in early in 1939. At Tilehurst Road, Reading. I became Sapper W. Holbrow, 226 Field Company, Territorial Army, Royal Engineers.
Was it easy to get in?
Yes, because, it was easy to get into the Territorial Army. They were crying out for people then. I mean, we let our forces go, so drastically. Germany had been rearming for all its might, and we had just done nothing, and we were so weak, both in manpower and armaments and so on.
Had you specifically wanted to be in the engineers?
Yes, because of my father. He was in the engineers in the First World War, and he did very well. He became major and commanded a field company. So I felt there was a certain tradition there. And by that time, I'd got interested in engineering and field engineering and so on.
And your unit was 226 Field Company?
Yes.
What did you think of the training that you got in the Royal Engineers TA?
Well, after I'd been embodied in September 1939, it was quite good, really. We did bridging at Wallingford on the Thames. We didn't have Bailey bridges there. That was pontoon bridges and box girder bridges, and that was very interesting. And we did demolition with gun cotton and gel ignite and so on. We trained all over Berkshire, Newbury, Wallingford on Thames, Stamford in the Vale. We did night exercises and digging trenches and so on. But as I should tell you later, my training was not used. The engineering training wasn't used. Furthermore, our equipment was so poor compared with them, as we later found that the Germans had. I mean, all we had were Lee Enfield 1914-18 rifles, about four Bren guns to the company, and four anti-tank Piat rifles, which were dreadful things.
Were they Piats or boys anti-tank rifles?
Boys. Sorry, not Piats. Boys. Yes, boys. And they were dreadful things. They used to just dislocate your shoulder nearly when you fired them. And I never heard of them putting anything out of action either. And we just had those. And we had a full complement of lorries and so on, decent army lorries and so on. And the officers all had trucks and so on. And we had all the necessary RE stuff, the bridges. We had box girder bridges and pontoons and all that stuff and so on. But yes, we were reasonably well trained for a sapper RE work, but. As I shall be telling you later, it never came to that.
Were you looking forward to going abroad or
yes,
not?
Yes, I was. I was most looking forward to it. By that time, I was hyped up and I was raring to go.
Was that true of your comrades?
No, not all of them. You see, we were a mixture. 2-6 Field Company was a mixture of militia who were conscripts. They were conscripts, and most of them didn't want to go anyway. They were not interested. There was a proportion of them. There's a proportion of the territorials who, like myself, like myself, were raring to go. Others weren't so keen. And then there was a stiffening of regular soldiers, including the company sergeant major. His name was Hollingsworth. He was a regular soldier. He called me Lofty on the first parade he had, and I remained for the whole war Lofty, except to the Germans, to whom I was Der Langer.
The long one.
Yes, the long one. Yes.
When exactly did you go to France?
Well, about November or early December. Incidentally, we were in the 48th South Midland Division, which my father had been in the First World War. Amazing, really. We were inspected by King George VI, the whole division, prior to joining the BEF in France, about the first week in January we went. As I say, I was all for it. I was looking forward to going to France. I wasn't too apprehensive, no. I don't think you are at that age.
And how did you actually get there?
Right. We crossed at night from Southampton to Le Havre with a destroyer escort. We had a few nights in a prison in Normandy, and then the whole company was moved to Mons-en-Pavel, a small village in the department Nord. There was thick snow and freezing conditions, and it was the start of the coldest winter for many years. This is January 1940.
Is this a place near Lille?
Yes, it is. It's between Lille and Douai. The whole company was sleeping on concrete floors of a large disused factory, and we were immediately all laid low by flu. If the Germans had attacked us at that time, they'd have met no resistance. Anyway, the company was dispersed in three or four sections, and we were in ordered to construct concrete block houses against possible German advance into Flanders and the Low Countries. My section was billeted at La Rosière, a small village next to Marigny, another small village in the vicinity. We were sleeping in barns and farm buildings. Our job was to build one block house. My section, anyway, was to build one block house in reinforced concrete walls and roof, 3 foot to 4 foot six thick. The 226 Field Company was basically territorial army recruited from Huntley and Palmer's biscuit factory in Reading, with a number of conscripts, militia, from all over the country, and a few regular soldiers, which I've told you about. The company as a whole was unsuitable to do construction work. Only two in my section had any technical knowledge. A civil engineer who did the setting out and construction work, and myself, who was in charge of the steel fixing.
So how did the work get done then?
Very difficult indeed. The ground was now frozen about 3 foot deep, and a compressor was required to excavate the foundations. The steel fixing involved many tons of heavy hook bars which stuck to your hands in the freezing cold. The construction involved many hundreds of tons of concrete which had to be wheeled up ramps. Very hard and exhausting work. Eventually it was finished, though, in April, and the weather by now was spring-like. The only doubt in our minds was whether the gun slits were located correctly, as this would depend on the direction of the German advance. In fact, I revisited La Rosière in 1966, and the blockhouse was still intact in position. The farmer told me it would be too expensive to demolish it.
What relations did you have with the local French people?
Right, you're coming on to that. Yes, righto. Except for the bitter cold, it was, and at times, exceedingly hard work. I enjoyed these months of the phony war. We had frequent trips to Lille and Douai and Lens. for drinking and other entertainment. And I had a girlfriend, Madeleine Troublin, whose father's farm I could visit in the evenings. Apart from the numerous estaminets where you could play housey-housey, or bingo as it's now called, and get drunk very cheaply.
How would you come to meet this French girl?
I don't know. I suppose I met her in the village street and exercised my French, because I was quite good on French. That was one of my best subjects. And living in France, I was conversationally quite good. I also found time to visit Pont-à-Marc, a local village where my father had been billeted in the Great War, but the French people he knew had died or left.
Did the French have any objections to British soldiers making friendships with young women?
No, none at all. They were all very friendly. Some of the girls were too friendly.
Did you ever come across any hostility from any French?
No, I don't think I did. I think they were too glad to have us there, you know. And there were no French soldiers in the north of France at all that we came upon. They were all further down in the central and southern divisions. And most of the young married women were sort of looking for friendship, you know. Their husbands were all in the army, posted elsewhere. No, we had quite a happy time there, really.
So you think that they wanted you there from the defence point of view?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Did many of them have memories of German occupation from the First World War?
Some of the older people did, yes. Some of the older people did. They hated the Germans. They called them the Salbosch and so on. We were very popular, and they seemed very hospitable.
Did any of the troops misbehave?
Well, some of them rather disgraced themselves in the in the brothels and so on. Plenty of those in Lille and Douai.
But did they cause any damage?
Oh, no. No, they just used to laugh at them, you know. Yes, I suppose there was a bit of drunkenness, but nothing like you get nowadays. No hooliganism or bad behaviour like you get with football crowds and that nowadays.
Who do you mean used to laugh?
Pardon?
Who used to laugh, do you mean?
Oh, the French used to laugh.
The British soldiers?
Yes. I remember seeing the British soldiers queuing up in Lille for a brothel one Sunday afternoon, halfway down the street, and the French civilians were watching them and really enjoying it.
Did it surprise you that there was this long period without any hostilities?
Yes, it did. We didn't know what was happening at all. We weren't ready for them, so it was just as well that there wasn't any. You occasionally had an air raid alarm, and you might hear a plane high up, but no, there was no activity whatsoever.
Did that disappoint you?
Yes, I think it did. I think it did. We were getting a bit bored by the time the Germans invaded Holland and Belgium on May the 10th, 1940. We were getting a bit bored by then.
Can we pick up on May the 10th now? And can you take me through in detail as much as you can remember, step by step, what happened when the Germans attacked?
Sure. Our whole company advanced by lorry up to the Albert Canal and Waterloo in Belgium, where the British Army hoped to hold the Germans. Here we experienced artillery and machine gun fire, or enemy artillery and machine gun fire, for the first time. We were also under continuous air attack from Heinkel bombers and Stuka dive bombers, and our Bren gunner in my section, Sapper Lewis, actually shot down a hedge hopping Heinkel, which was quite a thrill. We went to look at this plane and we were amazed at the modern materials used in its construction. You know, it looks sort of streets ahead of some of our old planes that we were using at that time.
You mean the construction of the bodywork?
Yes.
Were there dead aircrew in it?
No. They'd gone by that time. I don't know what happened. Yes, what happened? I don't know. There weren't any dead aircrew. So whether they'd wheeled them away a bit smartish, or whether they'd parachuted, but I would say they'd have been too low to parachute. I don't honestly remember. I hadn't seen a live German up to that time.
How confident did you feel by this time about the outcome of the war?
Well, we were impressed when we saw the forces advancing up. I mean, we were really impressed with our supplies and the guns and we didn't see any armour at that stage, but we seemed to have quite a few guns and that, and a lot of equipment and so on, and it gave us quite a feeling of confidence. We had no idea what the Germans, what sort of a war machine they'd built up, you know, and we felt reasonably happy about it. The only thing was, we hadn't seen any British planes much. That was not so good. I mean, these Germans just came over as they liked. There was no opposition to them, so we weren't too happy about that.
What had been the attitude of the Belgian civilians towards you as you went into Belgium?
Well, to be quite honest, they panicked very quickly once the Germans broke through, and they all retreated and left their homes and so on. I know we went through whole villages. We went into their homes, lovely homes, and they were just abandoned with the meal on the stove and all that, and food everywhere. You could go in the shops and take what you liked. They panicked. And their army, what was a joke, it seemed to consist of only cyclists. Yes, and they were usually running away.